Hello and welcome to The Road to Autonomy. The Road to Autonomy is brought to you in part by Stantec Generation AV. Stantec Generation AV combines some of the most experienced AV experts in the industry with the resources of a global engineering firm. Stantec Generation AV provides education, consulting, assessment, and guidance to any industry interested in autonomous vehicles. Learn more at Stantec.com. Hello and welcome to The Road to Autonomy. I'm your host, Grayson Brolte. On today's episode, we're absolutely honored to have Tara Andrina, Executive Director, Partners for Automated Vehicle Education, PAVE. Welcome to the podcast, Tara.
Thanks so much, Grayson. So excited to be here.
Excited to have you here because we've talked about this for a long time. Brad Sturtz, who's the chairman of PAVE, has talked about it a long time with Dr. Rosekind over at Zooks. Without public trust, there is no autonomous vehicle industry. I repeat that. Without public trust, there is no autonomous vehicle industry. Brad had the vision along with Dr. Rosekind to build PAVE, and PAVE's doing really great work. And I'd like for you to highlight that work and expand upon it because the audience should know that PAVE's doing a lot of really good things to build public trust. How are you building that public trust?
Well, Grayson, actually, I'll start kind of with what you were saying is how PAVE came about. And you're exactly right that it was kind of a combination of like you said, some folks from industry, some people from government, some people from nonprofits, and academia all really came together in this conversation. And the idea was we are making huge progress in the research and development of AVs. But when you compare that to where the public is, there's this huge chasm. We're making cool technology, but when you talk to the public, what we hear a lot is people saying things like, I would never get in one, I don't trust them, I don't understand them. And so we thought we're never going to make progress in this technology if we don't have the public on board. And so we also thought this is a really big lift, like moving people's opinions is not an easy thing to do. And so we thought it would be a lot more impactful if we bring all of these stakeholders together to have a conversation with the public. And so that's kind of how PAVE came about. And we go about it a lot of different ways. You know, obviously, education is in our name, so we do educate, but I really like to think of it as a conversation with the public. Every single person is a stakeholder in transportation. And so what we want to do is let everyone have a voice in thinking about what the future of our transportation system looks like. So we run events, we have communications campaigns, we do public sector education. We really try to reach all different audiences in all different ways to help people join this conversation and think about what the future of our transportation system looks like.
The technology is resonating with the work PAVE's done. Years ago, PAVE partnered together with SAE International to the demo days. And some of those reactions, I'll never forget it. There was a gentleman that I think it drove from Hershey, Pennsylvania to go there. I just wanted to try this. And the gentleman came out with this big smile. And then there's another individual that showed up. I'm just going to do this, and if I die, I'm going to haunt you. I said, ma'am, you're going to be fine. And she came out with the biggest smile and gave us the biggest hug. It was great things like that that led to building public trust.
That's exactly right. You know, one of the jokes we always say is you feel like you get people to an experience like that, and you want them to leave like thinking, oh, that was the coolest thing I ever did. But, you know, ironically, it was when people got out of the car and said, that was kind of boring. It felt just like riding in a car. That is a win, you know, that what we want is for people to get out of the car and think that felt like riding in a car. It stopped when it was supposed to stop. It turned when it was supposed to turn. I felt safe. I felt secure. That's building trust one person at a time.
If you look at building trust, PAVE member Cruise, which is a division of GM, they're operating fully driverless, no driver in San Francisco. And if you read some of the reviews or look at some of the TikTok or Instagram videos, people are like, this is the coolest thing in the world, and they're starting to build trust. So you have the individuals interacting with the vehicle that are trusting the technology, they're comfortable with it. There's some funny stories of people fall asleep and the cruise operator, excuse me, sir, excuse me, ma'am, please wake up. But that's a very positive sign because they trust the technology. And then on the other hand, you have headlines, and there was one in the Sun from the United Kingdom the other day, driverless cars might sound great, but would you trust on the school run? There's all these headlines that haven't been factualized. And I write to some of these reporters, a simple question. Have you ever been for a ride in a self-driving car? No. Well, then how are you writing this headline if you haven't experienced the technology? These headlines are eroding trust and leading to false narratives. How is an industry Do we overcome these hurdles?
Well, and you're exactly right. And this is one of our biggest challenges right now. You know, I actually have a whole spreadsheet of headlines with titles like, you know, self-driving car crashes when it's not actually a self-driving car. And there are two problems with this. One is it is making people think that that is a self-driving car. So if you're talking about, and I'm not trying to just pick on just Tesla, but if, for example, if they're talking about a Tesla and they say self-driving car crashes, people see that headline and they think, oh, it is a self-driving car, and that further increases dangerous behavior. Even Tesla has on its website, you know, requires an attentive driver at all times. But when we keep reinforcing the idea that these cars can drive themselves without a human at the wheel, that increases that dangerous behavior. But then the other problem is that it degrades trust in actual autonomous vehicles. If people see a headline about a Tesla crash and it says self-driving car crashes, then again, people start thinking, oh, self-driving cars aren't safe. When in fact, the technology that the article is talking about is not a self-driving car. But, you know, I'm not just blaming people. It's confusing. And not to be completely just self-promotional on Pave's behalf, but that's why an education effort is needed. We need to educate the public and we need to educate the media. I've spent almost 30 years in communications and I've had countless conversations with reporters saying, you know, we don't write the headlines. And I get that. But part of the problem is a lot of people do only read the headlines. And so if the headlines are wrong, you know, we all have social media attention spans at this point. And if people don't get past the headline, then we're really playing a dangerous game there.
We're playing a very dangerous game. I'll share a story with you that could have been very sad and very tragic, but I'm not going to do my own horn. I was able to save somebody's life. I was at a function and we were drinking alcohol, and this lady, mid-50s, early-60s, had a little too much to drink. And I said, ma'am, can I get you an Uber? Can I get you a Lyft? Can I have the valet call you a taxi to get you home? Oh, no, Sonny, you don't understand. I own a self-driving car. It's going to drive me home. I said, ma'am, you could barely talk. Let's do the right thing. No. This thing's going to drive me home. So I had to go down to it was at a hotel. I went down to the front desk and I said, excuse me, this lady can't drive. You need to put her in a Lyft or an Uber because she thinks her car is going to drive her home. And the gentleman at the front desk was like, thank you, sir. We will handle this. We will not give her keys from valet. But she was under the assumption that she was drunk, that the car would drive her home. That could have ended very tragically if I wasn't there to get the gentleman at the front desk to stop her.
For sure. And you know, and I do think corporate marketing is a piece of this. You know, when companies give products names that suggest that the car can drive itself, it's confusing to consumers. So, you know, again, I think that it's a complicated process. It's a little bit media needing to take responsibility, companies taking responsibility, and then groups like PAVE, and it's not just PAVE, a lot of, you know, groups are doing great stuff to try to educate and engage the public. So hopefully we all together can make some progress.
Names matter, actions matter. There's a very large international newspaper, and I started speaking to some individuals there, and I, off the record, and I said, well, why are you printing these headlines? And this individual said to me, you have no idea how much ad revenue and web traffic we get. These articles are, quote unquote, go bonanza for us. And our ad revenue goes through the roof. How much is this false narrative being driven by the ad revenue that they're generating from it? Because they tend to go viral, as with this individual from a major international newspaper, their traffic spikes dramatically.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, the ad revenue is part of it. And, you know, also just, you know, when we're talking about headlines, I also get it's much easier for them to write self-driving car than it is to say a car that under limited circumstances with an attentive human behind the wheel can handle some driving tasks. I mean, that just doesn't, you know, roll off the tongue. So it gets simplified, but to really dangerous results. And then you're right, you know, it well, you know, blood cells. So the you know, having, you know, more exciting, more catchy headlines is appealing. But yeah, it's scary stuff.
I'll give you an analogy. I was listening to a podcast today with the former chairman of Sony Entertainment, Sony Pictures. And he was talking about when he greenlighted Breaking Bad. And he was terrified that the drug companies, GSKs, the Mercs, would not buy ads because of what the Breaking Bad show was about. What happened if a bunch of advertisers got together and say, you know what, we're not going to buy ads on misleading headlines. would that change it? Since all that traffic, they wouldn't get the economic boost and boom from it. They would actually have to print something that's factually correct when you eliminate that?
You know, it's an interesting question. You know, and I have the same thing every year when I watch the Super Bowl. I kind of brace myself for the ads that we're going to see. Yeah, you know, but again, I think education is so critical here because I think there's even confusion. People don't even realize it's wrong. Like you said, there was another major international paper that I know a lot of people in our industry got really upset about a story a couple months ago and really pushed the paper. And the paper kind of said, you know, these are distinctions that most people don't make and we don't expect them to, which I thought was a terrifying admission. But, you know, I think we even have to agree on what the facts are before we can, you know, making major ad decisions based on them.
That's a very valid point. The big concern I have is that certain members of the public globally, they read these headlines, they believe that they can go into their local dealership or go online and buy a self-driving car. That's the scary part. And they're getting a system that has an SAE level 2 that you have to be attentive. And they think it can drive because that's what the headline said. That's really scary. You in an interview on February 18th, 2022 with Automotive News, you had the best line of the year so far. Cars require a driver today. Period. No matter how awesome your car is or what cool advanced things it can do, period. Well said. That should be the headline.
Oh, thanks, Grayson. but you know, that's why we're at this really complicated place right now. Cars can do great stuff. You know, we have automatic emergency braking and lane keeping assist and adaptive cruise control. It's funny, just in the last 24 hours, my husband and I went to drop a kid off at college, and we have one car that has adaptive cruise control and one that does not. And we were driving in our one that does not. And my husband started complaining, like, you know, this car doesn't slow down automatically when it's supposed to. And he's definitely not a car guy. But, you know, the convenience is real. And we want people to use these technologies because there are also huge safety benefits. We get used to it. But as cars can do more and more cool stuff, it also becomes easy to become more reliant on the car. And so we have this catch-22. We want people to use these technologies because they really do have the potential to improve safety and to save lives. But as people get more used to them, it's easy to become overly reliant on them. And that can make our roads more dangerous if they're not used properly. So yeah, it's this really hard dilemma of embracing the new technology and the safety benefits and the convenience. But at the same time, really needing to teach people that they are still the driver, always, always, period.
That opens the driver monitoring debate, but you're taking action. PAVE partnered with AAA, JD Power, National Safety Council, SAE International, and Consumer Reports on the Clearing the Confusion document. You're taking that first step, because imagine the thing, if all suddenly you have car A, I have car B, she has car C, he has car D, and the seatbelt had a different name. How would anybody understand what a seatbelt is? It would be that confusion. Is that confusion what you're trying to do with your partners and clearing the confusion document? Say, okay, this is really what it is and what it isn't?
For sure. And I think I want to be clear, there are two different naming issues here. And I really want to kind of distinguish between them. One is that we need clear language for what is available today. And then the other issue is that we need clear language to distinguish today's technology from future technology. So the clear naming of ADAS features helps consumers. Like you said, we teamed with these amazing other organizations to address that issue and just kind of to explain where it came from. And AAA did a lot of this great work, but they did a review of products on the market today, and there were 40 names just from automatic emergency braking, you know, things like smart brake support and different things. And it makes it hard for consumers to compare apples to apples, and they don't really know what it is that they're buying or what it is that they're looking at. So we wanted to encourage common namings that people understood what these features are. Actually, another plug I want to give is the National Safety Council has worked with the University of Iowa, this My Car Does What campaign. And that's also a great resource that people can go and plug into this website, the model of their car, and it really lays out these are the features your car has. But then we also need to be clear, like we've been talking about this whole time about level two versus level four technology. And, you know, people need to know that even if their car, and I'm going to be repeat what you said, I said back in February, but if you know, if your car can do really cool stuff, that's amazing, but you're still the driver until you're not. And those cars aren't yet available for purchase.
Alex Roy has the great thing to determine if it's an autonomous vehicle or not. Can you sleep in it? If you can sleep in it while the car drives and there's no attendant, it's a self-driving car. I want to give this idea, and I believe it first came from State Senator Brandis of Florida. Why not simplify it and use emojis? And then I started thinking about that. Crosswalks. Everybody understands a little person that's white, you can go. The yellow, don't go. The caution, or the red, don't go. Why don't we make it something so universally simple that a kindergartner can understand? Okay, mommy. Okay, daddy. That's not a self-driving car. It doesn't have the right emoji.
I love that, actually, Grayson. And I can't believe I've never heard you say that before. But yeah, I think Alex has always had a great way to describe it. And we really need to make it a binary. Either you are driving or the car is driving. And, you know, I really think I love your emoji idea, actually, but I think we really need to simplify it to that level for people to understand.
The consumer understands emojis. If you have an Android phone or an Apple phone, you have emojis on there. My grandmother and my mother-in-law, they send me emoji messages. They talk through emojis, and I'm like, you're in your 70s and you're in your 90s and you're talking to me through emojis. Wow, okay. And my daughter, who's in third grade, talks in emojis. I'm like, there's something going on here.
It's the universal language. Absolutely. That's amazing.
And there's even a movie called Emojis. So, so you're taking the document, you're working on clearing the confusion. When will it be adopted and implemented? Is it working with local governments, state governments, federal governments, or is it just going to the large OEM manufacturers and said, knuckleheads, knock this out. You're doing a lot of harm, even though you're creating great technology, because the public is not understanding it.
So, you know, and I think it's going to be a long process. We are obviously encouraging adoption of it, but it's complicated. Manufacturers like to have branded names for what their products can do. I'm totally aging myself here, but in the 1980s, 7-Up had this campaign that they said they had effervescence. Now, clearly, that was a fancy way of saying that it was a carbonated beverage, but consumers bought it and thought like, oh, it's cool, I'm drinking effervescence. And so brands like to say something that they have this product that's unique. You know, if you can say our car has Instabrake or whatever it is, it sounds cool. And you think, oh, I want that. The problem is when 40 different cars call automatic emergency braking something different, it's difficult for consumers to figure out, you know, are these all just really carbonated beverages, or, you know, does my car have effervescence? So we certainly encourage manufacturers to use this common terminology. And even if they have another branded name, to say this is Instabrake automatic emergency braking, so that they're always using the common denominator, we encourage that. But it's going to be a long process.
Carbonated beverages. You have Coca-Cola. You have Pepsi. Now I'm going to date myself. You have RC Cola. you have Jolt Cola. But at the end of the day, it's still soda, and the consumers know it's soda. That just some people are Pepsi people, some people are Coca-Cola, some people are RC, some people are Jolt if you really want the caffeine. But at the end of the day, it's soda. Can the OEMs come together and say, okay, at the end of the day, it's going to be a level two system or a level four system? Put all your IP and your branding around the experience, but say, okay, at the end of the day, it's still going to be this?
Yeah, Grayson, I think that's exactly right. Yeah, I think that's the goal, is we need to get everyone in there talking on the same page, for sure.
Could the public technically force their hands and say, we're confused? We're not going to buy your products if they're confusing anymore. And if you look at the confusion, if the way that the auto industry is evolving, it's moving from dealerships, controversial statement, to online sales, it's clearly going there. Consumers like to go on the website. Some like to dream or plan or properly budget to buy that vehicle, and they like to look at it, kind of like if you're going to a nice hotel. Oh, I can't wait. Let's see what the pool looks like. Let's see what the beach looks like. And they're going on there, and they're designing their vehicles. Could they get to the point and say, okay, well, why does manufacturer A make it so easy for me? And they clearly label it out, but yet the traditional one that goes through a dealer network makes it confusing. Do those sales for the online ones start to eat away at the traditional ones? And the traditional ones guys say, well, wait a second. Their ADAS sales are going through the roof. They started breaking it out. Why are we not selling? Oh, they're not confusing.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's certainly possible that public pressure could help. Although, you know, like we've been talking about, I think sometimes the cool names do sell. So we'd have to get consumers to the point that, you know, that the confusion is taking away from their customer experience. And whether that's the answer, or whether, like you said a few minutes ago, whether, you know, government forcing clear naming, honest marketing could be part of the answer. We'll see.
To me, there's very few companies in the world that can push this through. And one is everybody's favorite friend, and you can't give them a high five. You got to give them a high four. Mickey Mouse. If at Disney World in Orlando, if Disney introduced an autonomous vehicle service, either owned and operated by Disney or partnered with Disney, that starts to build that public trust. Because you go to Disney World, you go to see Mickey and Minnie, and can't forget my guy Goofy. You build the trust, and they're going to go home, and they're going to say, hi, they're going to go back to school. Hi, Susie. Hey, Bob, guess what I did? I went to Disney World. I rode in a self-driving car. This was the coolest thing in the world. That starts to build the public adoption, because when you go to Disney World, you trust it's going to be a safe environment. If you go back to the founding of Disney World with Walt, he wanted a place where a parent would never have to worry if a child would see something inappropriate or out of place. It was a safe environment for an adult to be a kid and for a kid to be a kid. Could Disney be the golden goose that ushers in the future of autonomy because they own the public trust?
So you're saying that Pave needs a mascot.
I think we should partner with Disney World.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I mean, there's certainly lessons. You know, I'm going off on a tangent here, but one of the things that I think about a lot with Pave is kind of your point about there are lessons learned. We are not the first group ever, or this industry, it's not the first time we've had to develop public trust in something new. You know, the automobile initially, the airplane, there have been lots of times over history that a new product that's really going to change life has come to being, and that the public needs to really get used to it, build their trust in it. And so I've spent a lot of time trying to look at examples and lessons learned and good ways to help to educate the public and build trust. And I, to be honest, I hadn't really thought through the Disney thing. I kind of am loving it, but you're right. I think that we need to look at ways that this effort has succeeded in the past. Actually, you know, one other example is the Click It or Ticket campaign, which is one of the most successful safety campaigns. And again, it was government and industry coming together in the interest of this public safety lesson, and it drastically increased seatbelt usage. You know, when I was a kid in the 70s, nobody wore a seatbelt. You sat in the way back. And that was a really intentional effort of speaking to the public about what a difference it could make. Obviously, it was a really tangible act. You have to click it. And there's a penalty. You get a ticket if you don't. So it was a little bit clearer than, you know, kind of a amorphous world of autonomous vehicles. But, you know, kind of the point is united safety campaigns can work and can teach the public. And I'd say the same thing during COVID is when you think about the language that we as a society learn and the behaviors we changed over a really short period of time, you know, people are movable, but it takes creativity and time.
Movable people in the 70s, pre-seatbelts, left turn, everybody goes to left, right turn, everybody goes to the right, and you got squeezed. Those were those games that you were able to play in cars before seatbelts. Were they safe? No, but they were a lot of fun to play.
Having been the middle kid, I can say I know all about the middle kid sandwich.
Exactly. History is a really great guide as you run Pave, and we've spoken about this quite a bit offline, is when Henry Ford teamed up with Thomas Edison and Harry Firestone, and they were commonly referred to as the Vagabonds, where they would go on the summer camping trip, where Henry Ford's goal was he wanted to sell more Model Ts. So the public's like, I don't need a vehicle, I have a horse. But he went around and built that, and the term motoring came around then, the term motel for the motoring place to stay. That's how motel came about. And then camping came out of that as well. And it built trust, and look what happened to the automobile industry after they went on that. And they had two sitting U.S. presidents. join them on their camps. That's a really great thing. Are you looking at other examples throughout history of ways that different technologies where trust was built to give you another more modern one? Not outside of automotive, it was when Steve Jobs first introduced the iPhone. BlackBerry was the dominant out of Waterloo, Canada, was the dominant thing. And the biggest pushback on Steve Jobs and Apple time was, doesn't have a keyboard, doesn't have a QWERTY keyboard. Everybody's going to want their BlackBerry, which at that time was referred to as a CrackBerry. And then lo and behold, everybody learned how to type on an iPhone. It's the most dominant phone in the world. But Steve Jobs and the team at Apple built the trust. Don't worry, you can type on this device before all the apps came about.
For sure. And I'm a history geek, and I spend an embarrassing amount of time looking at historic examples of public education and trust. And I'm kind of going to answer your question in a different way. But one of my favorite stories since I've been at PAVE is when we're talking about AVs kind of conceptually, you get into these really, first of all, people don't always even know what we're talking about. You know, when you say autonomous vehicle, it's literally the extremes from people who have cruise control and say, oh, I have a self-driving car, to people who picture like the Jetsons flying things and say, that's not, like, people don't even have a common understanding at all of what an autonomous vehicle is. But again, that's when we kind of talk about it abstractly. But what I have found is when you make it real, and this is exactly the Vagabonds, it was like the, you know, perfect historic use case that they showed people, when you have this technology, here's what you can do. You can reach these places quickly. You can, you know, the convenience and the, and I had a couple, so anyway, back to my story. I had an experience a couple of years ago that we had a PAVE member who, actually, I'm going to give them a shout out. They were bought by Cruise, but it was Voyage, and Oliver Cameron is one of the huge heroes in the space. But they were deploying in a community for older Americans, and they were getting ready to launch. And so they had asked me to come out to kind of talk about AVs with the community. And they were expecting all of these really complicated questions about safety and the technology and how the cars worked. But when we got to the town hall, and so it's like hundreds of people in this town hall, and they were talking about the deployment, when you give people a really concrete technology, their mind shifts to, how is this going to help my life? And so their questions were things like, you know, they had an app and you were supposed to type in the address. And literally some of the residents were like, what if I want to go to the pickleball courts and there's not an address? How do I get the car to stop at the pickleball courts? Or, you know, the deployment, I can't remember the hours, but say it started at 10 a.m. and ended at 7 p.m. And then the residents were like, what if I'm at this social function that ends at 8? How do I get home? When you really give people exposure to the technology, they start thinking about it in a much more real way. And it's no longer, you know, is this car going to fly? Is it going to, you know, and so I think that, again, I back to, you know, the my constant point about it, it's kind of giving people exposure to the technology and use cases. Let them kind of really think through, how can this be used to make people's lives better?
Thanks to you for highlighting the villages with Voyage. Oliver, years ago, prior to the Cruise acquisition, invited me down to the villages, and I went and spent a day with him riding around the vehicle in the villages and interacting. I love the term villagers, the different villages, and interacting with the villagers, and I would speak to these individuals. The first question was, when can we use the service? And I said, what would you like to use the service for, ma'am, sir? I like to go to the doctor in the hospital, because if something happens and I have to go for a treatment and I don't have somebody to drive me. And then the number two request, which I thought was really interesting, airport. And I said, why would you like to go to the airport? Well, pick the grandkids up when they come to visit for the holidays. Because a couple of individuals said it's very stressful for us to go to MCO, which is a great Disney term. I don't know if you know this one. It stands for Mickey's Corporate Office, because all the money going in and out of Orlando into Disney World. But, and they said, well, if the grandkids could go in there and we could see them on the video and say, hey, here's grandpa, here's grandma, we can't wait to see you. That's a real life use case where the smiles started to come, because now you're improving their lives.
That's exactly right. You know, which is why I was saying earlier, why I see all of this as a conversation with the public about how to make life better. Our current transportation system, a lot of people are not well served. And whether it's because they have a disability that makes driving difficult, car ownership is unaffordable for whatever reason, we have an opportunity now, and it's a once in a century opportunity to kind of really rethink our transportation system and to make it better for a lot more people. I only half jokingly always say this, but I'm in this, you know, kind of sandwich generation age. So I both have two teenage boys and elderly parents. And, you know, my dad is now deceased, but I had to take his keys away. And, you know, new mobility options would have been life-changing for him. And same thing, you know, I have these teenage sons. Frankly, I don't want them driving either. I wish we had AVs for generations on both sides of me. So, you know, I really think we, again, have the opportunity to really greatly improve mobility and safety and sustainability and all these things. We just need to make sure we're doing it in a smart way.
We're going to do it in a smart way. And the keys, it's a hard conversation. I haven't had to have that conversation, but to some individuals, we take the keys. That's a very hard, some individuals I've spoken to, they said it's heartbreaking because the parent breaks down. It's a, and I've heard this multiple times, you're taking away my freedom. You don't understand. And then if you look at the impact on the healthcare, and then they start to go into a spiral, I can't go to the beauty parlor, I can't go to bingo, and they start to lose that sense of freedom where the AV will solve that. And on the other side, with a teenage child, you don't have to have the hard conversation around drinking and driving because they have a safe alternative. And then as a parent, I love it. You know exactly where they are, and you know that they're gonna get there safely. So there's benefits on the coming up younger and going out older. And so if you look at all the benefits around this, there's not just the manufacturers developing the technology. It's not just the OEMs bending the metal to make it. PAVE has a really diverse group of members. You have startups, you have established companies, you have nonprofits that are working around medical, and you have Johns Hopkins, great institute involved, and you have insurance companies. PAVE has brought together probably the perfect group of individuals to build the public trust, to build upon this conversation that we're having now. Why did all these diverse individuals from diverse backgrounds and diverse industries come together and say, guess what, PAVE? We want to build public trust in autonomous vehicles.
So I think the idea is that all of these companies individually will be more successful if we get the public on board. You know, if people are saying, I don't trust that, I would never get in one of these cars, then none of these companies will succeed. You know, I think they all understood that it will be this process will be more impactful and more successful. You know, we all sink or swim together. You know, and you can't, and also it does take a long time. You don't just say to people, here, trust this. We need to earn the public's trust. And, you know, that takes education, that takes exposure. Yeah, so I think our members all understood that, you know, they're all kind of in this together, and obviously they're competitors, but they all want the industry to succeed. And, you know, kind of PAVE is the one way that they are all using to try to talk to the public.
It's fun because you have the companies that are focused on delivering passengers. You have companies that are focused on delivery. And then you have companies that are focused on long-haul trucking. You really need to trust when you have an 80,000-pound truck going down the highway with no driver that the public's going to trust that. That's a different... So you have the one aspect we talked about, the villages of building trust with individuals. And then you have trust for the highways. How is PAVE working with your autonomous trucking members to develop trust in autonomous trucks?
Yeah. So trucking has been our fastest growing member group by far in the last few years as the AV trucking space has absolutely skyrocketed. And you're right. I think when many people hear the phrase autonomous vehicle, they think of a passenger vehicle. And obviously a piece of earning trust is getting people comfortable with the idea of riding in a vehicle. But as you say, a big part of it is also getting used to sharing the road with autonomous vehicles. And my personal belief is that for many people, their first exposure to this technology will be through trucks. Right now, passenger vehicles are operating in these really limited areas. Amazing, amazing deployments. You know, Cruise in San Francisco and Waymo in Chandler, Arizona, there are a lot of them. But they're in limited spaces, whereas the trucking companies are really actively pursuing these long mile stretches. We have an amazing group of trucking companies who are really dedicated to this, and we're looking at a lot of different opportunities, everything from AV trucks at county fairs to videos to elementary school field trips, you name it, to give people exposure to technology to help build their trust. Yeah, getting used to sharing the road with these vehicles.
Field trips are awesome. You have a lot of elementary schools. They visit the police station. They visit the fire station. Every kid wants to hop there and take their photo in the fire truck. That's a big thing. And when we were kids, we had CB radios and we played the honk game. And every kid wants to hear the truck do the honk. So if you're going to have a field trip to the local AV developer, perhaps the children can go in there, get their photo taken in the autonomous truck, and then do the air honk. And the system says, honk, honk. Okay, Mom, guess what? The truck honked on its own when I waved my arm. That builds trust because they're going to talk about it in a very positive manner.
For sure. That's a great idea.
A lot of your members for trucking are in Texas. Thomas Bamonte from North Central Texas Council of Governments and I, he's been on the podcast. We talk a lot. And I said, Thomas, Texas is becoming the home of autonomous trucking. Grayson, I want to become the home of all things autonomous. I said, no, Florida will become for pass car and you can keep trucking. Texas has 683,533 miles of roads. A lot of roads, very common trucking routes. You're going down from the border to Dallas, San Antonio to Dallas, Houston to Dallas, these long roads. Is that a key market for you since a lot of your members, if not all of your members, have operations in the state of Texas?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, to be fair, there are a bunch of states who are really forward-leaning in this space, so I don't want to overlook them. But you're right that Texas is absolutely a leader. And Thomas is fantastic. And Thomas and other public sector officials in Texas, I really want to give huge credit to them, because not only have they made the state a good place for the companies, but they really have shown a dedication to public education as well. They're really eager to work with us to help build exposure and education. I think they really do understand the importance of public trust and public understanding, and for this industry to succeed, to really work with the public too. So yeah, there's great work going on there.
I would sum it up this way with Thomas and Satikog. They care. They want the technology there, but Thomas genuinely cares, and he has a colleague of his, Ernest, who's a wonderful gentleman, works on aviation, and Ernest donates a lot of his time to the Tuskegee Airmen Foundation to try and teach younger underprivileged children how to fly. They roll their sleeves up, and they want to get involved in the communities. They want the technology. They want it there, but they want the community to be involved, and they want to do a lot of good, which aligns with PAVE.
Yeah, completely agree. And they've been great partners. We PAVE as a public sector advisory council, where we work with people from, state governments, city governments all across the country, particularly some states that have really been leaders. Because I think other states, everyone's trying to figure out how to teach their communities, teach their public sector workers. And so we're trying to look at some of the leaders in this space to help teach other communities how to do this right. And Texas has been, a great partner for us in those efforts too.
It's not just states like Texas you're working with. So you have operations in the United States. You've recently expanded into Canada and Europe. Europe is evolving as a hotbed for autonomous technology. And then you have the UK, which just passed a law recently that to legalize it, they're emerging. How do you see PAVE evolving over the next decade? Perhaps will you set up operations in the UK? You have Expotica based there, several other autonomous companies. Or perhaps will you look to emerging markets in the APAC region?
Well, yeah, obviously it's a long-term effort, and it's a global challenge. Education is global. This is new everywhere. So, it looks different in different places. Certainly different governments are taking different approaches to regulation and policy. And PAVE's aim is that we are not looking to tell any public sector entity what approach to take. We really believe that it's best for decision makers to make the best decisions for their communities, but we are trying to give them facts and information about the technology so that they have the information they need to prepare their communities. It's funny you asked this question. Literally in the last week, I got an email from someone asking about starting PAVE Asia. So breaking news right here. So we are eager to work with partners globally to expand the public conversation and to, help nations and cities and communities everywhere prepare their residents.
Japan's another market that autonomy will have a positive impact because of their aging population. Japan has a very aging population, and the government has a lot of very positive policies in place for age in place. And a lot of those individuals do not like to live in the dense urban environment of Tokyo. They like to live in a more, if you use the American term, suburban area where they can have a little bit of space. And they're going to need an autonomous vehicle to get them to the doctor. Perhaps they have to go to a specialist for something, and the specialist is only located inside of Tokyo. Then they can continue to age in place, and that vehicle could take them there. That's a very positive market for you to possibly expand into if you do go into Asia.
For sure. And I think both internationally, even here in the U.S., you know, we have kind of microcosms of all this stuff. And again, back to use cases, but like, you know, looking in cities and what AV technology can mean for cities and then in rural neighborhoods, like what, how the technology can be used to help people in more rural communities, food deserts. You know, we really have tried to have a lot of different conversations in a lot of different ways, talking about different ways that AV technology can be used. And another important thing we haven't really talked about is integrating how AV technology can be integrated into existing transit systems. You know, I think we really need to think about the technology, not even to mention all the other, you know, mining and agriculture and ports and all the different places where this technology is really changing a lot of things for the better. So, you know, I think the same questions that we're struggling with and thinking about and really mulling over and pondering in the United States, you can extrapolate that on a global scale. And like you said, in different countries, in different regions, and then different weather. As we started PAVE Canada, a lot of our partners there are really doing a lot of thinking about, you know, how this technology can really, you know, improve some of the transportation difficulties of snow and ice. So yeah, a lot to think about.
There's a lot to think about, but there's positive things to think about. If you look at, we talk a lot in this podcast about pass car and trucking, but AV technology, we have a pending global food crisis. You can get autonomous trackers that can help farm the food that we desperately need around the world. If you look at the supply chain, which we experienced during the depths of COVID, autonomous technologies can help improve the supply chains, because at the end of the day, that will help lower the cost of goods for consumers, which can potentially blunt inflation. So autonomy, to me, is good for society. The narrative is starting to change. Oh, this is the boogeyman. If you look back at the elevators and all the different things, people are coming out, wait a second, if the ports had more automation and we had more autonomous trucks, the individuals could have gotten their goods. So wait a second, if we have more autonomous trackers, we can make more fruits and vegetables and children around the world can, I like to use the term, yummy tummies. They can have good, healthy food. So you're having these conversations with governments at all levels. There's some governments in rural parts of the world or in the country, and then you have the states and the federal governments. Over the last 4 years since PAVE's been founded and the technology has matured drastically, how has their perception towards autonomous technologies changed? Are they more willing to embrace it, more willing to have conversations around it? How does that look?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, what we hear largely is that governments are really eager to prepare their communities for AVs. I think they want to provide their residents new transportation options. I do think that communities really want to be thoughtful about it. I think, for example, the whole like scooter rollout was not what a lot of communities expected. And so they're taking lessons learned from some of those other technologies and saying, we really want to make sure we think through a lot of the implications. And that's why they're eager to work with PAVE and other groups to think through what is the best way to do this? What is the best way to roll out this technology? How can we be sure that we aren't just creating more cars on the road? You know, we're trying to think about emissions. We're trying to think about mobility for more people. We're thinking about parking and space and all this stuff. And then, you know, like we kind of touched on earlier, I think communities also, a lot of them, just like the rest of the public, don't know a lot about the technology. And so we hear questions like, how does a police officer stop an AV? How do first responders interact with them? What kind of infrastructure questions do we need to be thinking about? And so what PAVE helps these communities and states and countries do is learn the facts and help give them the information, that just the factual information they need about the technology to help them prepare themselves to make the best choices for their residents. But yeah, we definitely hear, oh, another common question is like, how do we get a pilot? Absolutely. I think communities are eager to learn more and to be forward leaning in this area.
You create and provide the PAVE guide to the future of autonomy.
There you go. Absolutely.
Because if you look at it, and having served in a city role years ago, there's a lot of confusion. Every vendor's trying to pitch a city. And there's this giant misconception. Cities have lots of money. Let's go pitch the city. The city will buy it. And lo and behold, cities do not have a lot of money, but there's this big, giant misconception.
Sure.
So you have the PAVE guide to autonomy. You're doing really well there. So keep going with that. And if there's an individual or an entity or a government that said, listen to this conversation, said, wow, this is really interesting. I want to get involved with PAVE. How can they get involved and be a part of this really special, wonderful journey?
Well, we have members, so any entity is welcome to join PAVE as a member. We also have both academic advisory council and a public sector advisory council. So we have folks, you know, kind of helping with our messaging and activity in that ways. We just really love to, you know, I think we cannot have enough voices in this conversation. Like I've been saying all along, I really think we want everyone to have a voice in what the future of transportation looks like. So we are eager to work with people and groups and companies to have this conversation with the public. So the more the merrier.
Where can they sign up to learn more? Is it pavecampaign.org?
That's exactly right. Yep. Our website is pavecampaign.org. You can send us an email from there, and you know, we love to have a conversation with folks. So very much encourage people to do that.
If you've enjoyed this conversation, you're interested in learning more, I highly recommend you visit pavecampaign.org. That's P-A-V-E campaign.org. Get involved. PAVE's doing a lot of wonderful things, and they're going to continue to do a lot of wonderful things. And Tara, putting this conversation together, in your opinion, what is the best way to build and maintain public trust with autonomous vehicles, trucks, and delivery?
You mean other than listening to the Road to Autonomy podcast? Yeah. So what I have, PAVE both has done our own polling, and we have also, I've read endless polling in this space. And what we see over and over are the two things that are the best ways to build trust are education and exposure. The more people know, the more they trust the technology and the more they're exposed to, you know, we were talking earlier about the demo events and when people get in a car and then, you know, get out and say like, oh, that was just like riding a car. I think the more exposure we can give people to advanced technologies, the more comfortable they are. Another thing we see in polling is the more people have ADAS features, the more they want it. They, you know, kind of realize what a big difference it makes. So, you know, I think we need to, you know, keep giving people exposure to the technology, keep the conversation going, keep doing whatever we can to get the word out there. So, yeah, we'll keep doing that. And hopefully now that kind of COVID is changing, we'll be able to do more, get out on the road and see more people in person too.
I look forward to seeing you on the road and perhaps you can another session at the Villages with other companies or in cities around the world to build that public trust. And Tara, as we look to wrap up this insightful conversation, what would you like our listeners to take away with them today?
You know, a few things. One is I would say read critically. When you see headlines, question them. You know, I'm not going to be so naive as to tell people to read the whole story because I know that doesn't always happen, but to question things and to be a part of the conversation. You know, this is our chance to make our transportation system better. And so, you know, to get involved, to, you know, let your voice be heard, make sure that the choices that are being made are you know, going to be best for you and your family and your, you know, like we talked about, older parents, younger kids. Like we really want everyone to have a voice in making sure that this new technology is making a better system for everybody.
As Tara says so elegantly, be a part of the conversation, get involved because the future is bright, the future is autonomous, and the future is public trust of autonomy. Tara, thank you so much for coming on the Road to Autonomy today.
Grayson, thank you so much. I love your podcast and I'm just thrilled to join you here.
Awesome. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Road to Autonomy podcast. If you've enjoyed listening, please rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Want to get in touch? Follow us on Twitter at Road to Autonomy or email podcast@brulteco.com. The Road to Autonomy is produced by Brulte & Company. The views and opinions expressed on the Road to Autonomy podcast do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Brulte and Company. The content discussed on this podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be taken as legal, tax, investment, or business advice.